Welcome to On My Walk, the reading podcast that helps you capture some of those aha moments from reading and apply them to your life and leadership. About a week ago, I picked up the book The Everlasting Man by G.K. Chesterton. Now, I pulled Chesterton off the shelf because I thought, hey, Good Friday's coming up, Easter's coming up, this book is going to help me. Little did I know that Chesterton would awe me the way he does. He awes me with his towering brilliance, his scope of history, his mastery of mythology and philosophy and world religions. And little did I know that this book in general, and this chapter in particular, would be just what the doctor ordered for my own soul. And I hope it is for your soul as well. Chesterton begins this chapter, which he's entitled The Strangest Story in the World, by pulling out just this little teaching that Jesus gives on the Sermon on the Mount when he says, consider the lilies of the field. And Chesterton walks through that story, and essentially what he does is he points out the literary brilliance of Jesus in telling the story. And Chesterton says, merely in a literary sense, it would be more of a masterpiece than most of the masterpieces in the libraries, and yet it seems to have been uttered almost at random, as if Jesus were just walking along the road and plucked up a flower off the side and then just came off the top of his head. And what he's emphasizing is that Christ towers over others. He's both subtle and superior. He's brilliant. But then he points out this, you know, generally, brilliant people are brilliant enough to know that they're not divine. I mean, Muhammad, as he said, they didn't understand Muhammad as claiming to be Allah, and Jews didn't misinterpret Moses as being Jehovah, but Jesus makes the claim that he was God. So this uniqueness about Christianity, it stands out from other religions. And then he writes this, even if Christianity was one vast universal blunder for making such a claim, it's still a blunder as solitary as the incarnation, because no one makes that claim. And then Chesterton says this, the purpose of these pages is to fix the falsity of certain vague, vulgar assumptions, this sort of notion in the air everywhere that all the religions are equal because all the religious founders were rivals, that they're all fighting for the same starry crown. And then he says this, hear him. He said, that is quite false. The claim to that crown, or anything like that crown, is really so rare as to be unique. Muhammad didn't make that claim, no more than Micah or Malachi or Confucius or Plato or Marcus Aurelius or Buddha or Zoroaster. And Chesterton writes, normally speaking, the greater a man is, the less likely he is to make the very great claim, i.e., that he is divine. And I find this true. I mean, 2 days ago, I went to an event here in Boca to recognize and appreciate and honor the physicians in our area. And the Rotary Club, the organization that put this on, did a splendid job. And they recognized many, many doctors, and then they recognized the Doctor of the Year. And the physician they recognized as the Doctor of the Year was about as humble as he was brilliant. I mean, you could just see it in his countenance. He was awed. He was grateful. He was honored. He was anything but expectant. And you never saw him raise his hands and say, yes, that's me. I'm the best. And what Chesterton says is that the greater a man is, the less likely he is to make the greatest claim that says, yes, look at me. I'm all that. So nobody can imagine Aristotle claiming to be the father of gods and men come down from the sky. And nobody can imagine Shakespeare talking as if he were literally divine. And sure, you know, it's possible, he says, that someone who makes that kind of divine claim is out there, but when they do, we know that person's a lunatic. But nobody looks at Jesus and feels, man, Jesus is a lunatic. Nobody comes away from reading the Gospels and reading Christ and feeling that way. Chesterton writes, no modern critic in his five wits thinks that the preacher of the Sermon on the Mount was a horrible, half-witted imbecile that might be scrawling stars on the walls of a cell. Instead, Christ was exactly what the man with the delusion never is. He was wise. He was a good judge. And what he said was often unexpected, but it was always unexpectedly magnanimous. It was often unexpectedly moderate. Chesterton writes, "Divinity is great enough to be divine. It's great enough to call itself divine. But as humanity grows greater, it grows less and less likely to do so, that is, call itself divine. God is God, as the Muslims say. But a great man knows he's not God. And the greater he is, the better he knows it. But that's the paradox. Christ is no lunatic. His teachings are otherworldly. But rather than shying away from divine claims, Jesus makes them. And when you read him in the New Testament, there's something superhuman about him. Human and more than human, as Chesterton writes. Now, if you listen to some critics, their suggestion is that when you look at Jesus in the New Testament, he's just a good teacher. But you can't help reading the New Testament and realize Jesus came to do more than simply teach. He's not a wandering teacher like Socrates was a wandering philosopher. Chesterton says Socrates was still a philosopher in the sense that it's not his business to do anything, but rather explain everything. But Christ comes along and he's different, and he comes with a different purpose. Listen to what Chesterton has to say.
Now, compared to these wanderers, the life of Jesus went as swift and straight as a thunderbolt. It was above all things dramatic. It did, above all things, consist in doing something that had to be done. It emphatically would not have been done if Jesus had walked about the world forever doing nothing except tell the truth.
Now listen closely, because Chesterton is going to make a distinction about myths and philosophies. Myths have an object. They're an inside-out approach to reaching the gods. But philosophies, well, in many respects, they have no object. Their job is to simply to explain things. So listen to this clip right here.
This is where it was a fulfillment of the myths rather than that of the philosophies. It is a journey with a goal and an object, like Jason going to find the golden fleece or Hercules the golden apples of the Hesperides. The gold that he was seeking was death. The primary thing that he was going to do was to die. He was going to do other things equally definite and objective. We might almost say equally external and material. But from first to last, the most definite fact is that he was going to die. No two things could possibly be more different than the death of Socrates and the death of Christ. We are meant to feel that the death of Socrates was, from the point of view of his friends at least, a stupid muddle and miscarriage of justice interfering with the flow of a humane and lucid, I had almost said, a light philosophy. We are meant to feel that death was the bride of Christ, as poverty was the bride of St. Francis. We are meant to feel that his life was, in that sense, a sort of love affair with death, a romance of the pursuit of the ultimate sacrifice. From the moment when the star goes up like a birthday rocket to the moment when the sun is extinguished like a funeral torch, the whole story moves on wings with the speed and direction of a drama, ending in an act beyond words.
Well, my aha moment was the title of this chapter, when I understood it, that Jesus, who more than anyone exemplified something of the divine, did not shy away from that claim. He embraced it. But being divine, one would think that he would say, "Look at me, look at me." He doesn't. Instead, Jesus begins a march to his death. The cross was his cup to drink. It was his hour that had come. It was the purpose for which he came into the world. And if we think about it, that is indeed the strangest story in the world. Because if he's God, we should be bowing down to him, not him dying for us. Now, I want to add this last piece because it shows the brilliance of Chesterton, both for his insights into the birth of Christ and his death on the cross, but also for the way he constructs this book. Here's what he says. "It is more within my powers, and here more immediately to my purpose, to point out that in that scene, the scene of Jesus' trial and crucifixion, were symbolically gathered all the human forces that have been vaguely sketched in the story. As kings and philosophers and the popular element had been symbolically present at his birth, And here he's referring to the chapter that precedes this one, which was brilliant. So they were more practically concerned with his death. And here's what we need to hear. And with that, listen to this, we come face to face with the essential fact to be realized. All the great groups that stood about the cross, and he's referring to Pilate and the religious leaders and the mob and the Romans and the Roman government who surround him, represent in one way or another the greatest historical truth of the time, that the world could not save itself. Man could do no more. Rome and Jerusalem and Athens and everything else were going down like a sea turned into a slow cataract. And then he says this, and this which is part of his entire argument against evolution, but it was not the weakness of a thing originally weak. It was emphatically the strength of the world that was turned to weakness and the wisdom of the world that was turned to folly. And his argument here is that the world, rather than evolve from the lesser to the greater, was actually greater, and it devolved to the place where it needed a savior. And that's what makes this the strangest story ever told, and that's what makes Good Friday so incredibly good, that God the Son was forsaken by God the Father so the Son could pay the penalty of a world that had walked away from God, a world that includes you and includes me. And the strangest story in the world is that God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, who would die on Calvary's cross, that whoever believed on him should not perish, but have life that is life indeed. The strangest story in the world. That's my thought on this Good Friday with G.K. Chesterton and the Everlasting Man. Now, what you do with it, that's for you to work out on your walk through life.